Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey guys, it's Grant Paulson. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast. We're changing things up. We're going to be making the show available for you 1 hour at a time. So if you're looking for a specific part of the hour of a show, look below at the description of what we've been talking about for time cues.
It's Danny. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you live on the radio from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. weekdays on 106.7 The Fan.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Thanks a ton for listening to the show as always. Much appreciate you making the program part of your day. Beltway Blitz is going to cover three teams in town you care a lot about, the Redskins, the Wizards, and the Capitals. Let's get started on the gridiron. Craig Hoffman is our beat reporter. Craig, is there a case to be made in any way that yesterday was not the Redskins' worst loss of the season?
Oh, yeah. I think the Dallas loss is the only other loss in competition, and that one's worse because Dallas is not a good team, and you should have beaten them, and your season was on the line, and you just, I want to say they no-showed in that game, but they played really poorly, and obviously Crowder's first quarter really put them in a deep hole they could never really dig out of. But at least like the defense started well in that game, and in yesterday's game, nobody played well. There's no real player you look at yesterday, no unit certainly that you look at yesterday and you go, hey, at least you guys played well. It was a debacle of epic proportions against a good football team, and that obviously should be said too, but man, that was bad yesterday.
What are the last three games going to look like? Because we as Redskins fans who've been here a long time, Craig, have seen this before. We've seen the unraveling. We've seen the leaks come out, the infighting, the cover-your-butt behavior by various Redskins employees to try to extend their tenure, et cetera, and so forth. We know what this looks like. This is one of those first dominoes to fall. Will this group rally, or do you see this being the, oh, well, here we go, detonate?
I think there's enough character, and something we talked about a lot earlier in the year is the competitive character of this team. And I think there's enough character in that locker room to rally. The question is if they don't have the talent to rally, and if you know they have a bad start, do they just not really? They basically do what they did yesterday. Like, oh boy, here we go again. Guess we're toast today. I don't like questioning effort of these guys. They put in a lot of work, and obviously, you know, whether they're putting in the right work or enough work is something that they themselves questioned yesterday. So I think that's fair game. But when they do go out on the field on Sunday, like they try hard. They're just not very good right now. I think that also the quality of opponent is obviously much less severe than it was yesterday over the next three. But you look at the Dallas game, and they weren't playing very well. And so, you know, it's hard to guarantee, of course, by any means that it's going to get better. If it doesn't, then, yeah, you're going to see a lot of – like, this could get ugly for sure. It could. I just don't think it's I wouldn't predict that it goes that way.
Why not?
I think there's, you know, guys like Swearinger, guys like Norman who have a lot of pride. You know, obviously on the offense, your leader in Cousins is going to prepare the same way every single week no matter what. Like, there's enough guys in that locker room that have pride that I think will be able to summon and rally the troops. I also think that if you're a younger player on this roster who's only playing because of the 18 injuries in front of you, you're trying to prove your spot in the league. And if you can't sell that as a leader or as a coaching staff, then that's a real problem. Say like, hey, you guys are fighting, maybe not for your playoff lives, but you're fighting for your professional lives. So how about you show up and do the work and put some good stuff on tape? Like, that should be a significant motivating factor for a large portion of this roster.
In that vein, Craig, who's got the most to prove over these last three games? Who could be, you know, part of the building block or on the street?
Right. I think Doxson and Perine are the two young guys that you really look at and try to figure out what are their roles moving forward and how do you approach their position groups in the offseason. Then you got a bunch of other guys that are, you know, if you're like a LaShawn Daniels who all of a sudden might get a chance to play some running back because you're literally their seventh option, and it's come down to that. But backing up P. Ryan, can you prove you belong in the league? If you're Ari Quanjo, can you prove that you really belong on a roster and that you have some promise that maybe you could start in this league eventually, even if you're a backup quality player right now? So I think it's guys like that, some of these fill-ins. If you're DeShazer Everett, can you turn it around and stop giving up big plays to tight ends that DJ Swearinger is telling you before the snap are going to happen, and when he's clearly, because he's yelling at you immediately after, like, can you prove that you could be a starting safety in this league moving forward? I think a lot of these young guys that are getting a lot of opportunity have a chance to prove that they belong in this league, or they belong in a competition for a starting job or something like that moving forward. And I think those are some of the names that obviously are in that group.
Thank you, Craig.
You got it. See ya.
Let's talk some hoops. Chase Hughes covers the Wizards for NBC Sports Washington. Chase, they lose by a point to the Clippers on Saturday. What went wrong?
In that game, there were a few guys, as Scott Brooks said after the game, that just completely didn't show up. Kelly Oubre and Markieff Morris had what was their worst games of the season for the two of them, and I think that was a little bit too much for the Wizards to overcome. They also let Lou Williams, who is been a long time really good scorer in the NBA, go off for 35 points, and they just couldn't stop him. It was a bad day for Oubre offensively. He was held scoreless, and he couldn't do anything to stop Lou Williams. So the Wizards, again, let up a double-digit lead against a team that's under 500, which has unfortunately been a theme for them this season.
This Mahinmi no matter what thing that Scott Brooks is dealing with or is employing. Now, he played pretty well, I thought, the other night. He knocked down his free throws, but he still just has hatchets for hands on offense, blows easy layups and those other kind of things, and has a foul-per-minute ratio that's you know, like a really tired guy at the YMCA on a Sunday morning. I don't know what it's going to take to get Jason Smith some run or if there's an adjustment coming, but it seems like this is what Randy Whitman did with Nene. Now it seems like we're in the same place with Mahinmi, where Gortat, I think you risk losing him when he keeps not playing down the stretch, and Brooks goes with Mahinmi. What are your thoughts there, Chase?
Yeah, there's definitely been times this season where I thought it would make sense to roll with Jason Smith, who hasn't been getting very many minutes at all this season when Jan Mahinmi wasn't playing well. But lately, Mahinmi does deserve a little bit of credit because he has been playing his best basketball probably over the last five or six games. You never really look at the offense, although he has reached double figures in the last two games, but he's been playing some pretty good defense against guys like Karl-Anthony Towns and Joel Embiid. I don't know if he can keep this up because obviously inconsistency has been a big issue for him since he signed with the Wizards. But if this season's been any indication, it's that Scott Brooks wants to put a lot of trust in him. I mean, even when he's been looking like the worst guy on the team or the worst guy on the court, he's stuck with him over Jason Smith. And even lately, you mentioned Marcin Gortat. He's shown more confidence in Mahinmi late in games than Marcin Gortat. So maybe it's something he's seeing in practice or something, but it seems like Scott Brooks has really been sticking to his guns all year with Mahinmi. And like I said, lately, Mahinmi has been a bit of a positive for them.
Chase, thank you, buddy. Much appreciated, as always.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Absolutely.
See you, buddy.
Wizards, that one-point loss, trying to overcome that slow start, just were not.
It was a bad one, man. Bad loss.
They got to get John Wall back and healthy if they're going to have a chance in the Eastern Conference this year.
Beyond that, they got to figure out the rest of this roster, too. A lot of guys are disappearing an awful lot. You're not beating Boston or Cleveland or maybe a couple other teams even with John Wall.
Let's talk some puck. Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post. You see him analyzing via the numbers in the Post, not just hockey, but all sports. Neil, how about 8 of their last 10 for the Caps? 7 of their last 8, they are rolling.
Yeah, this is a completely different team than the one we saw during the first part of the season. I mean, they're scoring goals, they're rolling lines, they're getting secondary scoring. Alex Ovechkin is still doing his thing, on pace to have more even strength goals this year than he did last year already. I mean, this team is winning, and they're now solidly in playoff contention, and that was something that you could not say even just a couple weeks ago.
Where does the truth lie? I mean, obviously they're playing great right now and things are happening that are good. I am not complaining. But the other part is a sample two here, Neil. Are they weren't as bad as what happened earlier and they're probably not as good as what's happening now. Where, when the dust all settles and everybody kind of equalizes, where will this team be in the hierarchy of the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's one I've really been trying to figure out, because even ever since the team reunited, Nicholas Backstrom and Alex Ovechkin, they're still in the bottom 10 for the puck possession metrics and even the quality of shot metrics. So they're winning, but they're not winning the way that you would typically think a quote-unquote good team would win. So I'm still a little bit skeptical, but it's hard to quibble with the results. I mean, they're second now in the Metro. My guess is they're one of the top three teams in the division, and they'll make the playoffs that way. I don't think necessarily that they're going to be a wild card team. I do think that they'll get one of the top three slots from the division. But other than that, it's really difficult to project which is the real Capitals team. Is it the one that we're seeing now? Is it the one that we saw a couple weeks ago? Or is it somewhere in the middle where they're a playoff team, but you still have to kind of be cautious of their outlook?
Neil Greenberg of The Post on the Caps, who are the hottest that they've been all season. You think Ovechkin's going to score 50 for the eighth time?
I don't see why not. I learned a long time ago not to bet against him in this regard. I mean, he's off to one of the best, if not the best, goal-scoring starts of his career. And I really like how that top line is built. I mean, Alex Ovechkin and Nicholas Backstrom obviously can score goals, but I think Tom Wilson appears to have found his place on that top line, something the organization has probably been waiting for since they drafted him a couple of years ago. And he's creating high-quality chances. He's tied for second on the team after Ovechkin and Kuznetsov since he's been on the top line. And he's doing everything that you want a guy on that top line to do. And I think that he's going to open up some space for Ovechkin at even strength. We already know Ovechkin can score on the power play. So I don't see why you wouldn't at least pencil him in for another 50-goal season, which is remarkable considering how difficult it is for players to get that many goals at age 30 or over.
TK421, why aren't you at your post? Thank you very much, Neil. Appreciate it, dude.
Thanks a lot. I'll talk to you guys soon.
See you, pal.
All right, you bet. We'll see you in studio very soon. There's Neil Greenberg of the Washington Post. We got breaking NFL news to get to right now. Let's head over to our update desk.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Carson Wentz has torn his ACL. Eagles head coach Doug Peterson just made the announcement. MRI was taken first thing this morning. They have confirmed the fear of the sideline battery of tests that were done yesterday. Carson Wentz, done for the season. Left knee, torn ACL. Now I also would wonder about his availability for week one next year. Remember, Robert Griffin
tore this lesson, haven't we?
His ACL in early January, about a month later, and he did the all-in for week one. Saga that ended up in some ways derailing him for an extended period of time after that. I don't think it's a guarantee that Carson Wentz will be ready to start at the beginning of September.
No, I mean, we think about now, the expectation is an update will be given that he's, quote, ahead of schedule. It's one of my least favorite tropes now in all of sports, is that nobody who ever gets surgery is just right on time or everything's fine or we'll keep it one day at a time. Everyone has to be ahead of schedule. It's this arms race to be superhuman like Adrian Peterson was, where he blew out his ACL and came back 7.5 months later and ran for 2,000 yards. Stinks, man. It really does. Again, I don't feel bad for the Eagles or Eagles fans. I hope they lose every game they play from here until eternity. But for the kid, it does stink, man. He was having an MVP season. In fact, he probably was the MVP of the league. Now maybe it's Antonio Brown or Russell Wilson or back to Tom Brady, the usual suspects.
But I'll bet you Brady would have won it, because that's just how it normally goes. But you're right, man. Carson Wentz was right there in the running. He had 33 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. He was stringing together these weeks, like this week against the Rams, 2 weeks ago, 3 touchdowns, no picks against the Bears, every single time he played. 3 games from the end of his sophomore season, he was going to complete right around 60%. You know, he doesn't complete a very high percentage.
Yeah, a little lower than you think, right?
Well, part of that, I think, is that he throws the ball down the field a lot. He also takes a lot of risks, which is why the 7 interceptions is surprising this year, because he fits some balls into some small windows. There's going to be a 15-16 pick season in his future when he's also going to throw 34-35 touchdowns, because he is taking some of those risks that go for 6 points. He's extending plays. He plays with reckless abandon, and inevitably it got him hurt, but he's a guy that's normally pretty smart about taking shots. It's football. It happens. You can't blame him. He's diving for the goal line. He's trying to make a play. It's a must-have NFC game. You're trying to be the number one seed in the conference. It's just a sad story all the way around. The NFC playoff picture, after this injury, now murkier. I mean, the waters got muddied yesterday. The Eagles are easily the best team in the NFC East. The Vikings are only one game worse. The Saints and Panthers are only 2 games worse. The Rams are only 2 games worse. Let's say Philly gets the opening bye and home field advantage throughout the NFC postseason. They're the one seed. If you look at the conference standings right now, the 2 seed would be Minnesota at 10-3.
Because they dropped one at Carolina this weekend.
I would say the second round matchups most likely, forecasting out, you'd have Atlanta playing the Rams, let's say the Rams beat them, and the Panthers playing the Saints, let's say the Saints beat them. The Rams would get the Vikings, the Saints would play the Eagles. Would you pick Philly at home with Nick Foles at quarterback to beat New Orleans? I think it'd be a good game, but to me that's a toss-up, and you got Drew Brees against Nick Foles. The Saints could knock them off. If somehow the Eagles survive that game, now you're playing the winner of the Rams and the Vikings in the NFC Championship game. If they played the Rams again, who they barely beat yesterday with Foles throwing for 4 touchdowns, do they beat the Rams in the NFC title game or the Vikings? I think their chances of getting to the Super Bowl vanished in a lot of ways yesterday. I still think they'll win a playoff game, but it is far from a lock at this point.
Yeah, they're so good everywhere else. They really are. They're terrific. Again, their front 7 is what it's about. Offensive line has been excellent this year, maybe better than people thought. I mean, when Lane Johnson is healthy, they're able to run the ball. It doesn't matter who it is.
Wentz may make them better, too.
That's a big part of it. I think that's the key.
Nick Foles, you know where he's at, man.
He's a giraffe
sitting duck.
Yeah.
He is going to stand in the pocket, statuesque. He's not going to run around. He's going to take shots. How many big hits did he take in the pocket, even in 10 attempts at the end of the game against the Rams?
Well, remember years ago when he was still playing for the Eagles, this kind of first go-around before he was a free agent darling that everyone realized, oh, he's not the guy. But I remember them playing the Redskins, and he was so impressive for that reason. He took shot after shot after shot and just kind of kept bouncing back. You credit the guy's toughness, but you also, as you said, you know where the target is. And a lot of these moments where, you know, Wentz is, you know, a greased pig just escaping, you can't do that if you're Nick Foles, who's just, again, a giraffe statue back there who can deliver the football unfettered, but he will be fettered. I'm with you. They could still mess around and beat almost all these teams, but I wouldn't bet on it happening a couple times.
You know what's crazy, though, as I was just kind of going through the playoff picture, how Sean McVay's Rams actually have a really good chance to play in an NFC title game this year. We've been trying to rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic in Washington, D.C. for 20-plus years, and we talk all the time about how you got to build and you know how long this process needs to take and patience. McVay showed up this offseason inheriting what became a laughingstock of a franchise under Jeff Fisher. They're 9-4. Let's say they finish 11-5. They're probably, I mean, they'd have to win their first round game again against somebody like Atlanta or Seattle, and that's not a lock, but they're probably going to play in an NFC title game. That means you're 4 productive quarters away from the Super Bowl in your first year under Sean McVay.
But conversely, this could kind of all be for naught. They've still got Seattle one more time. They could be... The NFC's deep this year, I guess is kind of my point.
The NFC's great.
Yeah, the top of the NFC especially is deep. Right now, Seattle's outside.
I don't think they can be knocked out of the... I mean, I know mathematically they can, but it's pretty unlikely that they get knocked out of the postseason altogether.
No, not out of the postseason, but they could all of a sudden go from, hey, this is a home field advantage, they could be in the NFC title game, to they could be the wild card team traveling on the road and, you know, dropping a game to...
Because I don't think of them as having a home field advantage. I don't know that it matters very much if they're in L.A. or if they're in Atlanta. Now, Seattle, you don't want to go to in the playoffs, even though I think that, as we've seen as Washington Redskins fans, the home field advantage in Seattle this year is not what it has been in the past because that team's not quite as good. But, like, the Rams at home is not a big deal, whereas Minnesota, I think at home, that's a big thing in a dome. If they're home as opposed to in Atlanta, those are two very different things. But Los Angeles, does it really matter if they're in L.A.? Do they have a distinct home field advantage? I don't think they do.
They don't, but what I mean by that is they could go from the third seed at 9-4 to the sixth seed very, very quickly with the remaining
what
schedule.
What do they have left? Seattle and what else?
So they've got, I know they've got Seattle. I think they've got a couple winnable games, if memory serves. At Tennessee, and then San Francisco to close it out.
Oh, so they're going 2-1 at worst.
You would think they go 2-1, which
so that
again,
gets them to 11-5.
Yep. Which, again, could put them in a wild card spot. If Seattle is able
Seahawks
to win out.
The Seahawks go 3-0.
And then Atlanta, of course, controls their own destiny. They
Seahawks
can still win that division.
Seahawks schedule rest of the way. They got the Rams. They got Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys, which they should win that game, but it's in Dallas. Could be a tough game. And then they've got the Cardinals. So they're probably going to go, I would think, 2-1 or 3-0. I can't see them losing two of those games. They lose to the Rams. Maybe that changes things a little bit. Falcons schedule the rest of the way if they were going to try to leapfrog Sean McVay's group.
Because I know they've got New Orleans one more time because they had that weird, quirky 2 times in 3 weeks thing.
They play the Bucs this Monday night. They got the Saints in New Orleans next week. And then they play the Panthers in Week 17. That's a tough rest of their schedule.
A, it's tough, but B, they control their own destiny.
Yep.
And that win against New Orleans was massive to kind of set that up. So that's a group that right now is the sixth seed, could absolutely jump up to the third seed if they are able to win out. I mean, the NFC, the point is the top six teams are really good. After that, there's a couple guys that are kind of hanging on. Green Bay is just sort of floating along, hoping that Aaron Rodgers can save them and they get some help, et cetera, et cetera. But the top six have separated themselves. And in the AFC, there's some separation, but you're still talking about the Bills who won that snow game, Ravens who were pretty impressive last night, even in a loss, and now, of course, the Chargers who are coming on strong.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan is how you can listen to us, and you can hit us up at 800-636-1067. That's 800-636-1067. If you're on the move, download the all-new Radio.com app, listen to 106.7 The Fan anytime, anywhere.
Grant, the Redskins are losers in terms of games. You and me are losers of a different sort. We've lost a bunch of weight together, thanks to our pals at EMP 180 Weight Loss. The holidays are tough. They are. It's the hardest time of year to keep the pounds off, to stay in shape, etc. EMP 180 wants to remind you to set goals, to check on those goals, be consistent, and have a good attitude. Not beat yourself up over setbacks. That's how they've helped us. They help you stay accountable, and they know what they're doing. If you do what they say, you lose weight.
You absolutely do. That's how I've lost over 70 pounds. Danny lost over 40 pounds, and we're keeping the weight off thanks to EMP 180 Weight Loss. They will teach you how to be healthier. You got to go to EMP180weightloss.com for information. They've got an office in Tyson's Corner, the one I go to. They got an office in Rockville as well if you're in Maryland. EMP180weightloss.com. Got
to hit them up. EMP180weightloss.com is the website. Take control today and make 2018 the best year of your life.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Redskins lost 30-13. Welcome back, Grant and Danny, 106.7 Ben. I keep having to stop myself because I keep almost saying 30-6. Like I forgot that Bashaud Breeland returned an interception for a touchdown over 95 yards.
And there's so much to deal with having to do with this game, and none of it's good. This is like storyline number 77 on a list of 1,000. Just the benching of Bashaud Breeland in favor of Quentin Dunbar. He's in during garbage time. The only time he's in the game before this is as a kick returner. Just another just little twig on the raging inferno of a Redskin Chibingus.
Yeah, it didn't make a lot of sense. I think that Breeland's a little bit underrated. Dunbar's a little bit overrated. But regardless, Bashaud Breeland was getting beat a bunch in the middle of the field by Hunter Henry.
Yeah, they're ready to move on.
Terrible matchup. By the way, I don't really know why that was the plan or why your cornerback is defending this 6'5" tight end. That didn't make a lot of sense to me. Anyway, what is your lead if you're writing a column about yesterday? That is the question at 800-636-1067. If you are tasked, like so many of the great columnists in town, with writing something off of that game, your big takeaway, turning it into a major thesis and point about the organization, how would you have done it? I guess for me, it is that the Redskins are regressing, that the Redskins, as the year's going on, are getting worse, that this team is not as good right now as it was a month ago and wasn't as good a month ago as it was 3 weeks into the season, that, yes, the injuries have taken their toll, and yes, the schedule has been brutal, but even by the standards now set, with some of those explanations, which you can call them excuses if you'd like to, if you're of that ilk, you're not even meeting my minimal expectations anymore. And they are minuscule, by the way. Do not get blown out. Compete every single down. Look like you belong. Look like you care. Come out and get something going on the ground against a bad run defense. Make a couple plays in the passing game. Go up the ladder and make a catch. Get some separation as a receiver. When you're open, Ryan Grant, and a ball's thrown to you in stride, and you got a chance to score, get more than 28 yards and being caught from behind. It just seemed to me like yesterday was the kind of game that was over before it started because you didn't do enough Monday through Saturday to make sure that you were going to win. And on Sunday, you didn't care as much as the Chargers, who clearly needed the game tied for the division lead, did. Don't excuse that for me saying that these players are just counting their money or that they don't love football. No, but for one Sunday, they didn't care as much as the team that played them, and it looked like it. And for me, I think big picture, my column is the Redskins are getting worse, and they are opening the door for the loud, crazy people to be loud and crazy. That's kind of my column.
Headline, it's happening again. It's happening again. History is repeating itself. And every time we've gotten to this point as a Redskins fan base or organization, etc., certain things that are very unpleasant have taken place. The Redskins, in order to engender their fans somehow in the offseason, have to put on some sort of big production. Whether it's Donovan McNabb on Valentine's Day or Albert Haynesworth or whatever the heck it was. There's always something, a head coaching search that's nonsensical, whatever it is. It's got to be something new to try to get people back in. The stink washes away after enough time, and you get some kind of giant grand gesture to show you. None of those things lend themselves to a stable and able, competent organization. You've still got the wrong guys in charge at the end of the day. So this is just like 2013. This is just like 2009. This is just like you can pick your December to remember sales event where a team goes into the toilet and it looks awful. My sincere hope, win, lose, or draw these last 3 weeks, is that it doesn't look like this again. Because it means that the winds of change will have to blow through Ashburn. It means that everything is on the table. As you said, the crazies will get to be crazy, and the two craziest are in charge of the Washington Redskins. And they know that to get the crazy people back in, they've got to make you believe in something. That's turning over a new leaf. It's hard to sell the sameness when the Redskins, they haven't committed to anything the same. Think about how many one-year deals they are. Think about what the quarterback's status is. Many of you have turned against him because the Redskins wouldn't allow you to like him. This is where we are. We are in a bad place, and I pray it doesn't get worse, but we've been here before, and each time it's gotten way, way, way worse to the point that you can't believe how the leaks are coming out and what they're being said, or what's being said almost on a daily basis, as each member of the organization tries to cover their butt, getting their own word out to point the blame somewhere else.
Yeah, I agree with most of that, Danny. And I think that the fact that we are here again can still be fixed, can still be solved, that it can still be halted.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to win, though. You know, Dan Steinberg wrote a piece where he said this does not look good for Jay Gruden. And one of the responses on Twitter was, how do they stop this snowball rolling downhill from becoming a snowman again? And his answer was winning. And it's overly simplified, and it shouldn't be that easy, but that's what it is. If they win a couple of their final three games, it's going to be a lot harder to make the case that they didn't care, that they checked out, that they didn't want to play for Jay Gruden, that you need to make changes, that they're not that close. If you can go 7-9 with everything that was stacked against them, and you can finish 2-1 in your last three, then it's easier to preach patience and another quality offseason and kind of reloading with a healthier group next year. Dave's in Haymarket. What's up, Dave? How are you?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen.
What's up, man? Hey,
so you asked, what would be the title of my article? And mine would be, nobody has done less with less. A story of poor play, poor coaching, and a whole mess of injuries.
Well, I mean, that's actually a pretty good way to look at it, because we always talk about doing more with less, or is someone doing less with more who's got a talented team. How about, they didn't have great players at every position yesterday with all the injuries. They're down to, you know, the slim pickings at the safety spot with DeShazer Everett playing every single down, and at defensive line, they got A.J. Francis out on the field more than they'd like, and at linebacker, it's Zach Vigil and Martrell Spate in the second half. At offensive left guard, you've got Ari Quanjo trying to block good defensive lineman Corey Legit. It's not working, by the way. So, yeah, you don't have a lot, but you're doing less with that less.
Yeah.
You're not masking deficiencies. You're not elevating the play of the guys around you. You're not calling or designing offense or defense, for that matter, yesterday, to get something out of those guys, which they've honestly done and we've given them credit for much of this year.
Nobody's, well, a couple lunatics might be, but forget about them for a second. I don't know that anybody expects you to walk into Dallas and thump somebody when you're that beat up. I don't know if anybody expects you to beat a team at 7-2 in its last nine that's playing good football at a soccer stadium in the Chargers.
Yes.
But it's also, I know you're missing people. Everybody's aware of it, right? You also shouldn't be bad enough that you're losing by a combined 41 points over these last couple weeks, or whatever the heck the math is. Maybe it's even more than that. I did the math quickly. 24 and 17, whatever that is. 41. That shouldn't be the case. And it should have been worse this week, by the way, because they let off the gas. They absolutely could have put a 50-burger on you if they felt like it. They didn't.
Easily.
They easily could have, though. And it's their own missed opportunities, the end of the first half, and then just, you know, they had 355 yards at halftime, for God's sakes. They did whatever the hell they wanted when they wanted. They dictated everything to you. You're not good right now, and I know that. I know how we got here. There's no way it's justifiable to get the doors blown off that badly each of these last 2 weeks. There just isn't.
It's a really good point made on Twitter I want to address about the roster construction this year and how it may have played into some of the Redskins' problems. We'll also take your calls next as well at 800-636-1067. If you've got a lead for a column you'd write on yesterday's game, we'd love to hear it. We'd like to hear from you. Remember, if you missed Kirk Cousins today at 11 a.m., we will re-air that for you at 1 about 15 minutes from now on the Fan.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Rivers, great protection. Rivers, deep shot, separation. Tyrell Williams! Williams has got the angle. He's gone. Touchdown, Chargers. Phillip Rivers on the money for 75 yards.
That was the easiest 75-yard touchdown that's ever been scored. Phillip Rivers dropped back and chucked the ball deep into the afternoon sky.
Oh, I thought you had him because I went here, but he went, and then if you... Ah, shoot, my bad.
Ian Eagle is heard on CBS. Grant and Danny welcoming you back. 106.7 The Fan. Shout out to Enoch. He's a listener that I met last night at Yard House. Came up to me while I was watching the Steelers and
Ravens
game, eating some Maui pineapple chicken. Very nice guy.
Mr. Maui Pineapple Chicken.
Just a really good dude. It's very nice when we get to meet listeners and they say very nice things and they're just cool to hang out with.
That is neat, by the way. That's one of the neater things that comes with it.
It's weird because I always assume, like my general assumption just going about my life day in and day out is that everyone despises us because I'm just used to Twitter interactions. And maybe these people do despise us, and then when they meet us, they're just nice to us. But when I meet people, people are still very nice, even though it seems like nobody likes us.
So what's weird is there's also this happy medium, and happy is the wrong word, but it's just the expression I use, where somebody on Twitter is like constantly a jerk to you or via social media, like sounds like they hate your guts, but then meet you in person and couldn't be nicer.
You think?
Yeah, that happened to me.
I think most of the people that don't like me on social media either wouldn't waste the time to come up and say hello or wouldn't be pleasant if they did.
I think that's a huge percentage.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, there's this weird, if the Venn diagram is, you know, the big circles, there's this weird little crossover. I'd say less than 10% of the population here that we're talking about via social media,
yeah,
just lacks the ability to like give like a wink In other words, like they say something terrible and you're like, oh my God, this is an awful person. But in reality, listen to the show, like the show, and tolerate us at a minimum.
Shout out to Tony in Woodbridge. Came up to me at BJ's Brewhouse yesterday afternoon where I was watching the early game.
Dude, you're out and about. Who are you? Mr. Social.
Here's what happened is my mom and a bunch of my aunts and women in my family threw a surprise. It's not a bachelor party. It would be a wedding shower for the fiance.
Yes.
So I had to drive her to that because I had to tell her that we were having a holiday party. So I drove her to the surprise shower.
It's covert showers.
Which was down in like Fredericksburg area.
Mm-hmm.
And so I met up with a couple of my buddies who I haven't seen in a while that are groomsmen in my wedding at BJ's Brewhouse at about noon. And we watched from 1 o'clock to probably about noon to three. I sat at the bar and hung out. And then I came back up north for the Redskins game. So in the afternoon, I was at this spot and this guy named Tony in Woodbridge came up. It was really, really cool. Very nice. Big listener. And then I went home, watched the Redskins game. And then late last night when it was time for dinner, I went to Yard House for Maui Pineapple Chicken because it's my Sunday staple.
Mr. Maui Pineapple Chicken.
Let's go to Eric in Alexandria. What's up, Eric? How are you?
Hey, guys. You know what? I don't care what these guys do on the field. Somehow or another, you two guys seem to make this comeback to Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen, and they're not playing. And I'm the thing I'm getting to, guys, is that I've seen coaches go from one team to another team and transform that team with the same players. I watched the Harbaugh brother do that, and I'm watching Sean McVay do that with the Rams. And I think that our problem might just be with the coach. It could just be they're just not getting enough out of these players. These players are as much pro as any players in the league. And what you
let me say this, Eric. Let me ask you a question and say that. First of all, if you think the Redskins are as talented as the Rams, particularly on defense, you're out of your mind. I mean, that's just not correct. And frankly, it's not close to correct. But my question to you, if you don't mind, would be, do you think Dan Snyder has done a good job as an owner? And do you think Bruce Allen has done a good job as a team president? Those would be my questions to you.
Okay, my answer to that Dan Snyder one is, I think Dan Snyder is doing what you would do and anybody else would do as an owner. First of all, first thing you do is you try it yourself and see what works. And if it doesn't work, then you hire the people who makes it work, which is what he's done.
Well,
and
they fired Scott McLuhan after he had two winning seasons, you may remember, this offseason.
But before that, guys, you have to remember that he did give these guys a chance to do their jobs. He did.
Couldn't disagree with that more.
Who is these guys? Who are you referring to?
Are we not talking about Mike Shanahan? Did he not give Mike Shanahan?
No, I don't think he did. I think he told Mike Shanahan he wanted Robert Griffin starting when Shanahan said he wanted to go to Kirk Cousins. I think he went to Mike Shanahan's office and told him to go sign Randy Moss, and Shanahan said, get out of my office. I've got a bunch of stories for you if you want them.
Well, did we not have Sean McVay, though?
Does that have to do with?
Okay, I'm just saying. What I'm saying is, did we not have the people in place to do it? And they're not playing the game. This is the problem, is that the players are playing the game, and they're as much pro. And, well, the matter of talent does come along, but when you talk about talent, guys, don't forget we had DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon. We had the players.
What about this year? Last year they were playing a Week 17 game to make the playoffs. The year before that with those guys, they made the playoffs. What about this year, this team? Because those other teams had a general manager putting them together that isn't here this year. So what about this year?
You also know that we had a defensive problem. They're trying to fix the defensive problem, but that costs money that we can't sacrifice for the offense. So now you have to put the defense together. And
don't forget, they didn't spend $15 million that they rolled over as well 2 years ago.
I just don't understand. They decided
not to spend a bunch of money that they could have.
It's a strange take. Wait a minute. I always appreciate Eric calling, so thank you.
By the way, maybe you blamed Dan and Bruce when I wasn't paying attention for the loss yesterday. I certainly didn't. That's not on them. But if you don't think this culturally starts at the top, they didn't win before Jay Gruden with Mike Shanahan and before Mike Shanahan with Jim Zorn.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get to here.
And before Jim Zorn with Joe Gibbs. They haven't won with anyone.
You've got one common denominator. And at a certain point, at a minimum, you have correlation. At a maximum, I would argue, as you said, with the culture, you've got causation. Is it some sort of crazy coincidence that nobody's been able to do it here consistently? Nobody? Not even the great Joe Gibbs? The best it's been is around 500, 4 years of Gibbs before he got exhausted. They have not, contrary to what Eric just said, they have not tried the one thing that tried and true works in the NFL. Doesn't work for everybody, but the one formula is this. A team president does team president things, helps with salary cap stuff, deals with contracts, says what pants we're wearing, etc. We'll take this trip. We'll give out these turkeys on Thanksgiving, whatnot, so on and so forth, is the big public face. The general manager who generally manages the football operation. The Redskins have never done it. Even when Gibbs came back, even with Mike Shanahan, it's the guy getting wearing the two hats, and he gets to take over until he does something that Dan doesn't like, and then he takes back over, and he gets pissed off, and we have another one of these episodes. They've never tried the one structure that works universally, that there's one way to do it in the NFL that works. All the good teams do it, except for, and the Redskins have never done it. They still, to this day, refuse to even try it, embark upon that journey. So the answer to what you're saying, Eric, is you're not correct.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.